This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Everyone, and welcome to Real Estate Right Now, where we talk about real estate matters that matter to you. My name is Jay Izzo, and we got a really great and interesting show. We're going to start out with title, who's got the title? And what kind of title do you have? And then we're going to talk, maybe we've got a little time, we're going to talk about, watch out for the scammers, is what we're going to talk about for today. My guest today is first to the show, but he is absolutely fantastic. His name is Scott Silvers. He's with Hilton Silvers and McClanahan, attorneys at law. Scott, welcome to Real Estate Right Now.
Thank you, Jay. I'm really excited to be here. Thank you. I think I mentioned earlier that this is my first podcast, so that's really exciting for me. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I don't know if I mentioned earlier, but when I lived in Korea, I was a TV show host for a couple TV shows.
I saw that. Yeah,
yeah. In a past life. But when I was preparing for this podcast, it kind of struck me that, I'm getting a little nervous about this podcast. Why? Why am I getting nervous? I've done these TV shows and seen by millions of people, and that was fine. So, and it dawned on me that, this is going to be live. The TV shows, we filmed for hours and hours over a weekend, and then the week thereafter, the producers and the directors, editors, they just whittled everything down for a 30-minute show. And so anything that was no good just never left the cutting room floor. Here, whatever I say, it's just going to be out there. So that's caused me some consternation, but I'm excited to be here.
Well, should I not tell you that this also goes to TV worldwide?
Oh, yeah, you should have said, maybe you should have left that for afterwards. So.
Yeah, this actually goes to TV, over 250 million homes around the world.
Excellent. All right. Well, I think that's even a greater audience than the TV shows.
Yeah, so if you're watching us on DBTV, okay, well, you're watching us. Here it is. We're talking about it. So let's talk about the title of a house. We have a lot of different situations right now, and we have people who are not married but are, going to purchase a house and then they're going to eventually sell a house. How does the title work in that situation when you're not married? Who's got the title? What kind of title do they get?
Yeah, that's a good question, and it's one that I think a lot of buyers more and more have observed over the years. More and more buyers are purchasing real estate with someone that they're not married to.
Right.
And that can be with someone who's their fiance, someone that is their significant other. They're just, marriage for them at that moment is not right for them. Could be they're purchasing real estate with their brother or sister, parent, or business partner.
Right.
And those people, when they're purchasing real estate, they have an extra decision they have to make. And that is, what kind of title are we going to take when we purchase real estate together? Because married couples, when we talk about ownership interest in North Carolina and title, we're generally speaking in terms of tenancy. And there are three forms of tenancy that we're concerned with. And one of those forms is called tenancy by the entirety. And that's strictly reserved for married couples. And for most of them, tenancy by the entirety is what's going to work for them. It offers the most protection, and it just generally fits most situations for married couples. So they don't have to really consider title as much as other buyers who are purchasing with someone who's not their spouse. So if you're purchasing real estate with someone who's not your spouse, you have to decide between the other two tenancies. And those tenancies are tenants in common and joint tenants with right to survivorship.
Okay. And help us understand what those two are.
Yeah. So tenants in common is what you would expect, what most people I think would expect intuitively when they're purchasing real estate with somebody who they might consider their business partner. When you purchase a property together and you're concurrent owners as tenants in common, you do have some limitations, of course, but generally you're free to convey the property away. You're free to sell your portion of the property away. You're free to gift it away, to leave it in a will to somebody. And if you pass away without a will, North Carolina statutes will govern who inherits that property. Generally, any surviving spouse or children, and if you don't have those, then it goes up to your parents and fleshes out right. to the rest of your family.
Right.
So that's tenants in common. Joint tenants with right to survivorship is very different in the sense that it acts more like tenancy by the entirety, the tenancy reserved for married couples. And in the sense that if one of you passes away, the joint tenant automatically gets your ownership interest in the property.
Okay.
Even if you leave in a will, hey, I want to give my ownership interest in this property to my mother. You write that in the will, sign it. You conform with all the legal formalities of the will.
Right.
If you set up joint tenants with right to survivorship and it's still set up that way in the real estate property, then it's not going to go to your mother. It's going to go most likely to the other joint tenant.
Okay, so it's interesting because we're talking about wills.
Yes.
And I've had Beth Bowen. I know you know
yes.
Beth, right?
She's Love been
on
Beth.
The show.
Yeah.
Yeah, and on the show, we talked about estates. So is it true then, even of an estate, if you try to put this in an estate, it doesn't matter if it's joint, it's still going to go to the other partner. Is that correct?
Correct. As long as you have not severed that joint tenancy. There are methods to sever the joint tenancy
okay.
after you've created it. But most people, after they've purchased property and they've set up the tenancy, they often don't revisit the tenancy unless they sell or refinance or whatnot. So it is something that you have to contemplate because if, you know, heaven forbid you're in a car wreck and you pass away and you intended to give your interest to a family member or somebody else, it's not going to be, even if you've put it in a will, you set forth in a will, this is how I want it disposed, that's not going to happen.
So let's take the situation. Let's go back to the situation where we have this couple who was not married.
Yes.
They're going to purchase this home, right? Together, right? Now, when do they make that decision of how this is going to look? I mean, and what is typically the decision that they make?
It varies. So when you have buyers who are either dating or engaged, there's a lot more that goes into the decision process, as you can imagine, as opposed to if you're purchasing with your sibling or a business partner. Because you have to start thinking in terms of who's going to pay for the mortgage, who's going to pay the down payment, are we going to care about how much contribution there is to the down payment or the mortgage? Because you can find yourselves in situations where you take property as joint tenants with right to survivorship, and maybe only one person is in a position to pay for the mortgage. And they pay for the mortgage throughout their life. There's no contribution from the other joint tenant. And if the joint tenant that is paying the mortgage passes away, then the joint tenant who didn't contribute to the mortgage, they're going to have title. And maybe the buyer's completely fine with that. And maybe they're not, right? So that's something that you have to think about and consider. I mean, if you take that even a step further, if the inheriting joint tenant who didn't contribute to the mortgage then later passes away, then their interest would go to perhaps their family members or whoever they left the ownership interest in a will. So there's a lot of scenarios that can play out. And, you know, I think this is a good time for me to say, what I'm saying should be a good starting point to discuss your situation with your attorney. Don't take what I'm saying as legal advice. Take what I'm saying as a foundation to jumpstart your conversations with an attorney, because every circumstance is different and you want your attorney to be able to go in, look at the situation and tailor the advice to your particular circumstances.
So that, which brings me to this question, Scott, is so where in that buying process should we be talking to an attorney about this if we're in that situation?
Yeah. So when I'm performing a closing or when I'm doing title work, I would prefer to have that conversation with the buyer, certainly before closing. The earlier in the process, the better. Sometimes that conversation is had at the closing table. Sometimes.
Really?
Yep, it happens. Sometimes.
That seems late to me.
It is very late. And it's something that we are concerned about. So when we sit down and say, okay, if this is something you have not contemplated, we really need to just pump the brakes a little bit and think about what it is you want to accomplish, right, what it is that you're wanting to do, because there is a lot that goes into it. So the earlier in the process, the better. If you can talk with your realtor and say, hey, this, you know, we're not married. Can you let the attorney know we're not married? And right, we would like to talk with the attorney right, about that situation. And in fact, Tony Fink of your firm contacted us last week, and he sent us a contract, did exactly what I would hope any realtor would do, and tell us, hey, these buyers, they are great buyers. They're not married. I want you to reach out to them and discuss these different tendencies. And so that's perfect.
So to me, Scott, what I would think would be the best advice towards a real estate professional would be, okay, if you know you've got this situation, do it as far up front, because yeah, I would, because I'm also thinking about the mortgage implications here too, right? Because they're probably both going to be on the mortgage.
In many circumstances, but not always.
Okay.
Yeah. And sometimes, often in, when one person is paying the mortgage, they will qualify for the mortgage without the joint tenant
right,
supporting the loan.
But even so, because of our state, right, just even though you're not on the mortgage,
right,
you do have some rights.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's important for, and we have had those situations where at the 11th hour, the lender finds out
right,
that, oh, wow, this person's going to be on title and they're not married. And then it gets kicked back into underwriting right, and it delays closing. Right. Because, of course, like you implied, the lender certainly does right, care and needs to know about the situation and what kind of tenancy that the buyers are going to take.
Title. So really, it really behooves the buyer to be way upfront about this, really early.
Absolutely.
If you're considering buying right now, then and this is your situation, you should be talking to someone like you immediately, and yes, and your lender.
Yes.
Right.
Yep. And depending on your circumstances, even an estate planning attorney.
Right. Right. Because, I mean, let's be honest, the estate is better than just a will.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
Right? Because it's so beneficial. I know Linda and I, you know, do our estates and it's just, it's so much more intricate right down to the very letter of how things are going to be. Should something happen to both of us, one of us, you know, what's going to happen, how things, and you don't worry about it.
Right.
You know, when you're done, it eases your mind. Okay, so then if we've done all that work up front, right, so then if something should happen or the relationship should break up or whatever that might be, are there other complications that can still happen even if we've gone through this process?
For sure. So, for example, going back to the example with a couple where one person is either paying all of the mortgage by themselves or paying the lion's share of the mortgage, when you're purchasing property together, you might be in the honeymoon phase of your relationship
right,
and looking through everything through rose-tinted glasses.
Wait, you mean that happens?
Have you heard of something called love?
What do you mean after the honeymoon, there might be a marriage or something?
Some disagreement. I've heard of that. It's never happened to me. Never happened to me. So, I don't think my wife is watching, but she might later.
Right, she might later. Yeah. She might listen to the show, right? Never has happened to Scott, ever.
Okay, good.
All right, we're good there then.
Complete harmony.
Yeah, so there's complications that do exist, right? Give us an example of something that maybe you've run across that where there's a complication where there was a breakup or something like that has maybe occurred or that you're aware of.
Yeah, so one of the first things that comes to mind is a situation where a buyer was in the situation where he was going to pay for all the mortgage. He was the one that qualified for the mortgage.
Right.
And when we were discussing, they did the right thing by talking with me up front and saying, hey, we're going to purchase property together. We don't plan on getting married anytime soon. And he said to me, I'm going to be paying for the mortgage, and my girlfriend is not going to be on the loan and is not going to be paying or contributing to the mortgage. And when he started to really think about it, we discussed the situation. He said, well, you know, we probably need to have some joint tenancy agreement. I would like to have joint tenants with right to survivorship because if something happens to me, I want her to be able to stay in the home, to live in the home, and basically inherit the home automatically. That's one of the great things about joint tenants with right to survivorship is you don't have to go probate a will. You don't have to go fight with the courts or even worse, maybe the deceased partner's family over ownership. So I want her to have the house immediately. And so he said, that's what I want to happen. So joint tenants with right to survivorship was the right thing for him and for her. But he also said, I recognize that I'm going to be putting all the money on the loan. And so I want to have an agreement between us stating that if something happens, if, for example, the relationship sours or one of us moves out, we're going to account for the contribution. We're going to account for how much I contributed to equity, how much she contributed to equity, and we're going to do it fairly. And, you know, there's a very mature way of approaching it.
Right.
And there's a good chance they'll never have to revisit that agreement.
Right.
But setting up some sort of agreement like that ahead of time can really just make things very clear and simple. And it's a good way. I think it forces perhaps sometimes uncomfortable conversations, but they're much more comfortable to have during that honeymoon phase rather than later.
Yeah, when things are a little bit more toxic or contentious.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. That's great, great stuff. So I hope you got the big one is, right, folks, and that is, you know what? If you're going to do this, do it up front. Don't wait till the ninth hour. Do it up front because that's going to be your best opportunity to work through things right now, especially when things are nice and everybody's happy, right? Don't wait till later. Okay, so let's talk about the scammers.
Yes.
Because we had a situation here just recently that we actually had a property listed for sale. Owner had all the information.
Okay.
Right? And we actually had the property listed. And then we get a call from this guy who says, hey, I see you got, he's in California, and he says, hey, I see you got my my piece of land listed. I never listed it with you. And we went, what? Right? This is more common and others, right, isn't it?
It is. It is becoming a frequent problem. Two forms of fraud that I'm noticing that are big right now in the real estate industry. Wire fraud and what you just mentioned, somebody fraudulently trying to sell a piece of property, often is vacant land, but it can also be a home and that they don't own.
Right.
Yep. And there's a lot of things that kind of are indications or red flags that might be what's going on. But fraudsters, as you can imagine, as technology advances, they're becoming more and more sophisticated.
Oh my gosh.
And, yeah. Yeah. And
No. All the information was there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't want to, I'm afraid of creating a to-do list for fraudsters. Like, this is how you do it. So without going into too much detail.
Yeah. Okay, fraud 101 here with Scott.
It kind of goes to, you know, I think a lot of people watched Breaking Bad and thought, oh, I can be a drug dealer.
Right,
I can do that.
Right.
So hopefully nobody watches this and they, oh, I think I could pull this off.
I think I
pull,
right.
But I think what a lot of them do is they target the elderly or they target owners who live out of state, California, or even better if they live abroad. They look for property that's owned by those type of people. And then they look to see if there's any mortgage or and registered. If there's no mortgage, it's much easier because if there's a mortgage, the attorney, the closing attorney is going to contact the lender and say, hey, how much is owed on this property? And the lender, there's going to be a lot of red flags because the lender's going to say, wait a minute, the person who's signing these documents are not our borrower. So they're going to look for unencumbered property, unencumbered land or real estate. A home. And then they'll contact somebody. They'll contact an agent or they'll say for sale by owner. And the agent will go out there and put a for sale sign. And what the fraudsters often ask for is a quick closing and cash.
Of course.
And they list below market because they just want to get in and get out of the closing before the real owner knows what's happened.
Right. Yeah, and this happens. I've heard other things like people do quick claim deeds.
Yes,
as a
quick claim deeds, and sometimes they'll do, you know, they'll do general warranty deeds or special warranty deeds. They'll do almost. They'll just say, "I'll give you anything you want."
Right.
They'll oftentimes they'll somehow find somebody who has a notary and will sign documents, and the person who is the notary, they must, you know, have some kind of arrangement, because they will send notarized documents, and it right. will look legitimate. If on the face of the documents, if you're just examining the documents, you say to yourself, okay, all right, we got yeah. the closing documents, we're ready to close. But you know, if there are a lot of red flags that you can look out for. So if they never want to talk on the phone, that's a red flag. If they never want to meet, that's a red flag.
Right.
If they ask for a quick cash closing and it's under market value, that's a red flag. So one way to kind of guard against that is to say, hey, I would like to have a Zoom call with you. I would like to discuss this with you. And most fraudsters will back out of that right away. And asking to see their ID while they're talking with you on Zoom, that's a really good way to kind of sniff out some fraudsters.
All right. So that's awesome advice, by the way, because it does happen to us. And by the way, it turned out great.
Yes.
Because the owner in California actually said, hey, how would you like to list it?
Well, that's great.
So that's the
best possible outcome.
That was the best possible outcome. He said, gosh, you guys are doing a great job. And we loved it. How about if you actually do it? Okay, well, we can do that. Let's talk about wire fraud, because this is a serious issue. I was just in a broker in charge update, and they were talking about wire fraud becoming more and more and more prevalent. And even, not just from the mortgage lender, but even attorneys. You guys get hit with it. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was recently in a meeting with other real estate attorneys, and there was somebody presenting. He was an attorney for an insurance carrier. So their business was figuring out and defending real estate firms or insured people who have been victims of wire fraud. And he said, listen, every year, our number one case by far is real estate firms and wire fraud. And he didn't even name the second category. He said, but the second category is just way down here. It's just basically this and everything else, wire fraud. And the issue is with real estate transactions, it's almost a target-rich environment, because everyone knows that there's a lot of money being exchanged between parties and frequently. So if somebody can sneak in there and intercept the money, whether the money's coming into the law firm trust account or whether it's going out of the law firm trust account, it's just very easy to intercept that money if they can get in there with different wire instructions and then just disappear. So there's a lot of things that you can do to protect yourself against wire fraud. Number one, make sure that you discuss the and confirm the wire instructions with your real estate attorney's firm. Okay, call them. Don't use the phone number that's on wire instructions, because one of the most common methods of fraud is a fraudster will somehow either they'll just create an email that looks like the domain looks similar to the attorney's domain, or they will actually hack into the attorney system and send an email and say, hey, we've changed our wire instructions, so send the money here. And they might have a phone number for you to call and confirm. Don't use the phone number on the wire instructions. Google your real estate attorney's website. Make sure it's a legitimate website. It's a nice professional looking website. Call that number, confirm on the phone verbally what the wire instructions are, and make sure when you're selling your home, when you give wire instructions, make sure that there's a notary block there. So when you sign your wire instructions, someone has looked at your ID and verified that's you. So the attorney knows, okay, I can rely on these wire instructions, because it's heartbreaking when there's a lot of people who are falling victim to it.
And it could be millions of dollars.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I read about a case. It wasn't $1 million, but it was $800,000. And this poor couple in California, they had saved for their dream home. They were so excited, as most people are when they're about to purchase a home. And they received instructions similar to what I was describing. Hey, don't send your money here. Send it here. We've changed banks recently, that sort of thing. So they wired the $800,000 and it went overseas. At the time that the newspaper article was published, they were not able to recover the money. And I just can, it's really difficult to imagine what kind of stress and heartache that would create. And it's just, and it's sad, but it is preventable.
Yeah, it is. You know, we've done our time.
Oh, well, that was fast.
Yeah, it really was.
That wasn't as bad as I thought.
Yeah, right. No, it wasn't. You were great. Tell people how they get a hold of you.
Yeah. So again, we're at Hilton Silvers and McClanahan. The easiest way to get a hold of me is calling our number at 919-848-6164. 919-848-6164. My name is Scott Silvers, and we have a great team ready to help you. I think they're watching right now, so I'm going to give a shout out to them. And just call us anytime.
That's awesome. Thank you, Scott. Hey, folks, thank you for watching. You know what? You had a lot of choices. You chose us. I can't tell you thank you enough. And you know what? Listen, there's all sorts of ways you can listen to us, either by podcast and, of course, watching us on DBTV. I ask that if you are listening to us a podcast, give us a positive review. We would love that you would do that. I'm going to be back next week. We're going to have another great guest. We're going to be talking real estate, and it's going to be awesome. You know what I say to you everywhere all over the world, and that is ciao, everybody.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.